Welcome to Webs of Truth with Lindsay and Kat.
I'm Kat Lee, and I'm a spiritual business mentor.
And I'm Lindsay Lockett, and I'm a trauma educator and nervous system coach.
This is an offshoot of our own podcasts. Lindsay is the host of the Holistic Trauma Healing Podcast.
And Kat is the host of the Rooted Business Podcast.
We're stoked to give you a peek into our real conversations because this is the stuff that we talk about all the time when the mics aren't on.
We wanted to share what it feels like to weave conversations through friendship and curiosity with someone you love.
We are nerds about nervous system integration, emotional alchemy, conscious relationships, and the magic found in nature. If you are too, you're going to love these chats. Hello and welcome to our second episode of Webs of Truth. If y'all are catching us right here, my dear friend Lindsay and I have decided to do a sub podcast. And it really just comes from a semi-selfish desire to just continue to have conversations with Lindsay, and we'll just record them and share them with y'all because I just love picking her brain, and I think that we have a lot of fun together. So today's conversation is a bit inspired by some coaching client interactions I've been having. I'm finding that several, not all of my clients are coming in with coaching wounds. And what I mean by that is by the time they get to me, they've probably gone through a few coaches. And inadvertently, I don't think that the coaches are doing this on purpose, but inadvertently, they bring something to the table, whether it's an emotional thing or a tactical thing, and the coach is not able to hold space for them. And it happens to just like slam on the like not good enough, too much wound. And so I want to talk about what that looks like in the coaching industry. I know that you've got a lot in the like medical industry part. And I think that we can sort of jam on that a little bit as well, because I think that they're very, very similar. It essentially comes down to practitioners not doing the work to be able to hold a safe space for folks. And how can we as practitioners, because most of the folks who are listening from my realm, I think some of the folks from your realm, but how can we as practitioners do better for our clients? And then from the client perspective, if that shows up, what is some of the languaging support that you can reach for so that you don't end up carrying a wound as well? So yeah, that's kind of the framework that I wanted to throw out there.
Yeah, good stuff. I love it. I'm thinking of one client in particular that I had earlier this year. She and I started working together, and she was honestly one of my favorite clients. Like, she was such a dream to work with. She was so open, so willing to try anything. She stayed in touch with me on Voxer. Like, I loved working with this woman. And she was a coach herself. So I don't, it never came up that she had had any negative experiences with other coaches. Mm-hmm. But she had had a really traumatizing medical experience. Like, not in the sense of like a neglectful doctor or like medical malpractice or something like that, but she went to the emergency room and was having a panic attack, but didn't know she was having a panic attack, because most people who go to the ER with a panic attack think they're having a heart attack.
Yeah.
Right. So she didn't know that she wasn't having a heart attack. She was just having a panic attack, but she went to the ER. And what do you do whenever you're having a panic attack? Like, physiologically, your heart rate is really, really fast, and your breathing is really, really shallow, and you're super, super anxious. And sometimes there's even pain in your chest, right? Like, I've had panic attacks where I thought, this is it. I'm dying of a heart attack. Mm-hmm. And the doctor in the ER said something to her that I'm sure to him it was like he's trying to be a good doctor and like warn her about her health. But the way that it landed in her body was so like terrifying for her, because all he said was, you know, it's really not good for your heart rate to get that high.
Okay.
And she took that to mean my heart rate can never get high ever again.
Oh.
Because if it does, it's bad. It means there's something wrong. And so while we were working together, we were exploring like perfectionism and healing from perfectionism through pleasure and play and through just doing something new and not being good at it, not being perfect at it, and just enjoying yourself while you do it. Mm-hmm. So she decided that she wanted to do a dance class with her husband, and she wanted to play pickleball.
Mm-hmm.
And so she found a pickleball league, joined it, found a dance class, joined it, started going, and like the next day sent me a Voxer message. I don't know. I had so much fun at pickleball, but I noticed that my heart rate got really, really high. And like it just – maybe it's just not for me because it's just making my heart rate get too high. Same thing happened with the dance class. Yeah, I did this dance class. It was fun. We had fun. But my heart rate got high and I'm just afraid – that this means I'm going to have to go back to the ER and that the doctor told me not to let my heart rate get this high and all this kind of stuff. And I was like, client, are you open to the possibility that when you are doing more strenuous physical activities, your body requires more oxygen and more blood to flow in order to give you the energy you need to do these higher cardiovascular output activities? And that means that your breathing is going to get more shallow and fast and your heart rate is going to increase. Like, and that doesn't mean that anything is wrong. It means that everything is right because your body is doing what it needs to do to increase oxygen and blood flow.
Mm-hmm.
And that had never occurred to her before.
Yeah.
Like, it was like a light bulb switched on in her brain and she was like, oh my goodness, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
So that's my example of something that a medical practitioner probably said in passing as like a warning or something. But in that tender state, she held on to it and made it mean so much and carried it with her. This was in the 80s that this happened. So 40 years she had carried this belief, I can never let my heart rate get high because of what that doctor said. And like, yes, that's irresponsible. I also don't think the doctor meant anything like nefarious or malicious by it, you know? Yeah. So that's just one example of like how the slightest thing said that may not have any meaning to the person who's saying it can land in someone's body and it can have this huge meaning and take this like important place in their lives for a really, really long time.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
I think what I observed is similar because I worked as an acupuncturist and I worked in the fertility field and I worked alongside Western doctors for several years. I think in particular when it comes to medical wounding, if I could just like umbrella statement it a little bit, for a lot of doctors, and I'll put myself into this category as well because I wasn't always the most, I'm going to say compassionate practitioner before I had done a lot of the work that I've done. Like, your job becomes your job, you know? And so the things that you see 20 times a day, we don't really recognize that that's actually the first time that that person is encountering it for the very first time. And so there's, and then especially with the medical industry being like, you have to get, you know, clients in and out the door. Like, there's not a lot of time. There's not a lot of space to like sit in the like discomfort of this person hearing something for the first time. And I feel like that's where a lot of the wounding comes in, is like when you can't put yourself into that client, that patient's perspective, and recognize that like, hey, this is the first time in my industry, it would have been like, this is the first time they're hearing that, like, despite the medical interventions, they didn't get enough eggs this cycle.
Yeah.
You know, because I worked alongside a lot of IVF patients. Maybe this is the first time they're hearing that their hormones are off, you know, and that there's not an easy, just like, here, just take this pill sort of an answer. And so I think that a lot of, if we can sort of step outside of the framework of this is a mechanical thing and step more into someone else's experience, yeah, you know, I think that that goes such a long way. And this isn't just for like medical and coaching industry. Like, I'm actually sitting on a harshly worded letter right now, to my real estate agent. My husband and I purchased this property. At the time that we purchased it, it had no well, it had no septic, it just had a barn on it. And, you know, our real estate agent was like, oh yeah, like I have a ton of experience with land and land purchases. And when we asked like what sort of inspections should we do, she told us, oh, I wouldn't even, you know, worry about getting a septic inspection done. And she was like, there's tons of people around here who have septic tanks. It shouldn't be a problem. And as I started, like, you know, asking my friends, asking you, like, is this a smart decision? Everyone was like, no, go get the septic inspection done, please. That's the smart thing to do.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I sort of brought it up later and was like, hey, I feel kind of uncomfortable that you recommended that we didn't get the septic inspection done. And her response was, well, really, honestly, they only come back, like, there's like a 10% chance that you wouldn't have been able to put a septic there. And in my mind, I'm thinking, this is my entire life savings, my husband and I's entire life savings. And what if we had been, I mean, thank God the septic came back fine. But like, what if we had gone into this land purchase, we can't put a septic here, which means we can't put a house here, which means that, you know, out of my own ethics, I would want to disclose that to any future buyers if we wanted to sell this place. So, you know, I think that, again, it's that situation where it's like it was just a job for her. And not recognizing that this is actually like a pretty massive decision for us. You know, same thing happens in the medical industry where it's like, if people aren't given all the information so that they can make a sovereign choice for themselves, that runs into a whole lot of stickiness. And so I think that, like, for me, it's have compassion for the other person's experience. And also give them as much information as you can so that they can make a sovereign and autonomous choice for themselves.
Yeah, I think for me, what's coming up is like, sorry to interrupt, but like,
no, go ahead.
I'm just feeling really defensive on your behalf. Like, I want to just like, give me her phone number so I can call your agent. I want to be like, listen, bitch, I know you like have probably been sitting on this property for a while and you really want to sell it. But like encouraging people not to gather as much necessary information as they need to feel good about this purchase is not the way that you need to go about selling this.
Yeah.
Like that sounds like a, you know, in the back of her head, she's like, I just want to sell this property. Like, mm-hmm. Oh my God, it's been for sale forever. I just want to sell this property. So I'm going to tell these people, don't worry about a septic inspection. It's fine. You know? Like, because that means that she's more likely to sell the property and she mm-hmm. wants it off of her hands and she wants to get her check and she wants to walk away from it and go on to the next property. And like similarly, different, but also similarly, I think with medical practitioners, they seem to, you know, with their like white coat attitude of like, I know everything. You just need to listen to me and trust what I say. Like, don't ask questions. I don't have time for this. I have 15 minutes with you and that's all you get. And I don't have time to answer your questions. And oh, you're one of those that Googles everything. Okay. Right. Mm-hmm. Like mm-hmm. just, it's like, I'm the expert. So trust me and don't ask questions. Yeah. And like, I don't follow any coaches who do this, but I used to follow a lot more people on Instagram than I do now. And I noticed coaches sort of doing the same thing. Like, I have the answers. If you just go through my $10,000 program, I'm going to give you everything you need. You won't need anything else after this. We're going to fix these things. You're going to make tons of money. You're going to heal your nervous system. You're going to da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. And then like offering this like certainty to people of like, I'm the expert. You can trust me. And then not allowing for people to ask questions or like poke holes in that or be curious about that. Or like at the end of the program, when it's over and the thing isn't fixed, like they're still struggling or whatever, then the coach is like, oh, well, you just didn't do the work.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Like that's real shitty.
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard that also as you're never going to have the results that you want until you integrate.
Mm.
I've heard that. I mean, to me, when I hear that aspect of the medical industry, the coaching industry, I think that what comes up is we are just slamming on people's not enough wounds.
Totally.
You know? And instead of doing the hard work as a practitioner, let's say in the medical space, like, why are my patients Googling these answers? You know, maybe it's because I'm not educating them enough. And so, like, if I trust my practitioner, if I trust the professional that I've hired, like right now we are in the process of getting the septic dug. I love my contractor. Like he has, between the contractor and the soil scientist, like they both have answered all of my seemingly stupid questions, been super patient with me. I've even like part of the process ended up being a whole lot more expensive than I was anticipating. And on the phone, I remember being like, fuck with my contractor. And he was like, okay, so that's the word of the day. And, you know, what can I do to help you feel better about this?
Oh, wow.
My contractor has better bedside manner than a lot of the doctors that I've worked with.
And better than your realtor.
Yeah. Right? And so it's like, if we can stop looking at these roles in our culture, doctor, coach, therapist, whatever it is, as being like authority figures, because also that's how we're taught to market ourselves. Yep. Is like position yourself as an authority is something I've heard a lot. And instead, if we can really just get down, not even get down, because again, that implies some sort of hierarchy, but like be at the same level of our clients and say like, hey, like I'm going to walk you through this. And I've done this a lot of times, but you are a unique story. You're a unique person. In my world, you have a unique business. And so there's likely going to be some tweaks and amendments that we have to make along the way. But like, I can walk beside you as you do this work, mm-hmm. you know? And to me, like, this is how we empower our people to make their own decisions. Like I hate that we take decision-making away from our patients and clients. I think that that is a fucking travesty. And, you know, the original definition of doctor is teacher. Like, where did we get away from the concept of we have to teach our clients? We have to teach our patients in such a way that they feel empowered to make decisions about their own life and their own livelihood. That's going to have like pretty significant ripples in their life. You know, I don't want that responsibility, quite frankly. Yeah. And it would be unfair of me to take that responsibility away from them just because they have a not enough wound. And I think that that's what we're preying on when we say, I'm the authority, you have to listen to me, I have all this experience, and so you just have to trust what I have to say, you know. So yeah, I'll pause there.
Yeah. I mean, as before you even said the way that we position people as authority, that's exactly what was coming up for me, is like, as a culture, we have this really fucked up relationship where there's like hierarchies of everything. And, you know, I certainly, as a person, like outside of being a coach, I as a person have definitely like looked to experts and authority figures for what I should do. Everything from what I should eat to what I should wear to what I should have in my home to what I should consume to, like, I have outsourced that a lot because, you know, marketing people with air quotes good marketing skills, which I would say is unethical marketing skills, they position themselves as this shiny, like, oh, I'm this expert and I figured it all out, so all you have to do is follow my magic formula and you're gonna be fine. And if I've learned anything as a coach, it is that there is no fucking magic formula. Like, there is no way that I could take the process that I do with one individual and apply it over another individual without making some sort of tweak or adjustment or change. Whether that's like the amount of time that it takes someone to get from point A to point B, or if it's the way that I deliver it, like I have to have a softer delivery with some clients than I do with other clients. Mm-hmm. If it's the way that I can challenge them, like that's different from person to person. Some people are really open to challenging feedback and some people get really, really upset and they feel threatened by it. And I mean, this is a big reason why I don't follow a lot of coaches on the internet, is because I see people using this, you know, form of marketing of positioning themselves as an authority, and their landing pages and their Instagram and their bios and all of this stuff is like this glowing resume for what an amazing coach they are and how they can fix any problem you have. But I don't think that that's real. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah. I really just don't think it's real.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's interesting that you bring that up, because I've been doing a lot of my own sort of digging into sales pages and other coaches, like landing pages and home pages and things like that. And partially that's because I'm redoing my website, and it's been a slow process, much slower than I think Andre would want it to be.
It always is. Kind of like living on land and homesteading. Everything takes longer and costs more than you think it should.
Yeah. So, but I started looking at other people's sales pages and being like, scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll. Like, I just, like, I was astounded by how long these sales pages have gotten. And as I'm reading through the copy, I can't help but see the, like, will you please understand me? Will you please get me? Will you please get the thing that I'm trying to sell? Will you please, like it's coming from a place of please choose me kind of energy. Versus like, hey, these are the nuts and bolts of what I have to offer. These are the intentions. This is what I can realistically promise. And here are some stories about other people who have gone through the program. Like, my sales page for BAM, I think cut it in half to like what it used to be, because I started noticing in my own sales copy, I was holding a little bit of that energy as well. And so if I want to be inviting people in with a sense of like solidity and stability, then that needs to be shown through my copy. And ultimately it begins from the internal work that gets expressed outward into a sales page. But to me, again, it always goes back to how can we empower our clients? And I think that that's another form of I want to call it like overriding people's sovereignties, is by like giving them like a fucking fire hose of information, thinking that that is, you know, going to be the valuable thing that helps them land.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. What's coming up for me is my Feel Without Fear sales page. It's really long.
Mm.
And the energy of please see me, please value me. Let me like explicitly explain every single thing on here that I possibly can without giving anything that's behind the paywall away, so that you can make the decision to join this program. And like, I don't think that so one of the things that I did whenever I first started this business and marketing stuff was poking at people's pain points.
Yeah.
I don't feel like I do that anymore. Sometimes there is mentioning of people's pain points, and I don't think we can get away from that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think people need to know, I understand and I see you in your pain, mm-hmm. right? Like, that's just being an empathetic human. But poking at people's pain points is like, here's your pain point. Here's how I'm going to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not something that I want to participate in at all. Mm-hmm. So I don't feel like my long sales page is that, but as we talked about in our last Webs of Truth episode, like I did not realize with my Feel Without Fear marketing this time around how much good girl energy was going mm-hmm. into that, in terms of like, I'm just going to keep creating more content and explaining this more and like trying to reach people more, and please see how good this free stuff is that I'm giving. Can you even imagine how valuable the stuff behind the paywall is? Like, mm-hmm. please value me. Please say that I'm worthy. Please, please, please. It was this very like desperate energy. And, you know, over-explaining is a trauma response for me.
Yeah.
And when I look at my Feel Without Fear landing page now, I don't see pain point marketing, but I see over-explaining. Mm. And so before I open it again in the spring of next year, I'm going to redo the whole thing, because I don't want it to come from this lens of, I'm just going to over-explain this so much so that you can see how valuable it is, so that it can answer every single question you have, so that you have the certainty you need to hit buy now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, like,
yeah.
If I'm totally honest, oh, this feels really vulnerable to admit. If I'm totally honest, I want the people who hit the buy now button and they don't have all their questions answered.
Mm.
Like, they just trust the pull that they have.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And that can be enough. Or they trust the desire they have.
Yeah.
And that can be enough.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can feel the energy of a program or of a course of BAM, like you can feel the energy of it with very little explanation.
Mm-hmm.
You can feel the energy behind it, and that would be enough to go mm-hmm. by now.
Mm-hmm.
Not because there's 50 paragraphs of over-explaining and here's why this is so valuable and here's why you want to pay for this and here's what you're going to get and here's what you're going to learn and here's why I'm qualified to teach this. And like, yeah. So I have to redo a sales page in the next 2 months.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for sharing that, because I know that that's something that you're like in process with right now. And I remember when you showed it to me, like that was the one piece of feedback that I had for you, is I was like, it's pretty long, you know? And I think that it's so important for us to talk about these things. I think it's so important for us to like model that, like, we don't have our shit figured out 100% either. you know?
Fuck no.
And that's actually not something to like pull away from. That's actually something to like lean into. And we're always going to be in process. And I think that there's this thing within healing communities where there's this nebulous place that we get to where we never get triggered again. We never have to feel these scary emotions again. Like we're sort of in this like Zen state. And I know that I've had people reflect to me, like, how can you stay so calm in like stressful situations? It's like, oh honey, like that's cause you don't see, cause you're not within my inner circle. You don't see me crying face down in the bed, you know?
Yeah.
Because I didn't get the thing that I wanted and still like deeply desired. You don't see me picking fights with my husband because I have some sort of like unintegrated wound around relationships. Like these are all things that I do and integrate and process and like I take responsibility for within the confines of my own inner circle. But like it's not something that I feel like everyone is entitled to see and
absolutely
have access to. Yeah, so I think absolutely. It's so important that we like share that like being human is actually moving through a lot of these things. And actually as a spiritual entrepreneur, the lessons never fucking stop.
Mm-mm. No, what's coming up for me is, you know, it was not that long ago and I'm not going to divulge too much here. But it was not that long ago that David and I were having a massive whopper of a fight.
Mm-hmm.
And I called you and we stayed on the phone for hours. And like that is not something that I don't know if I'll ever feel comfortable talking about that publicly. Like, mm-hmm. 'cause it's not the world's privilege to get to see that.
Yeah.
And it was – I mean, I even remember as I was talking to you, I had this fear of like, is she thinking that I'm unqualified to do what I do? Is she thinking that I have an unhealthy marriage? Is she thinking that David and I are bad people? Like all that fear was coming up for me.
None of that was happening on my side.
But yeah, like what, you know, and that was just a few months ago, you know, mm-hmm. like that was recent. Mm-hmm. So that's the first thing that I always want to dispel is like any idea that people think that I have achieved or attained some level of like enlightenment or whatever, where I'm not still having a very human experience, because I am still having a very, very, very human experience.
Yeah.
And I think that's what turns me off about a lot of the coaches and practitioners that I see online. It's not that I don't think they're talented. Or that they're not an expert. Like I do. I totally believe that they're experts. It's not that I don't think they can't help people. But when all I see is branding, but I don't see vulnerability and authenticity, that's like,
yeah.
When it's just like, my program will fix this for you and you'll never have to deal with this again and you can make 10K in 1 week and like all of that kind of stuff. I'm just like, ugh. But show me when you didn't make 10K in a week and show me how you handled that, because that's going to happen for me and I need to know that you know what to do.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Show me that you've had a fight with your husband and that you've repaired. And that way mm-hmm. when I'm working with you and I have a relationship issue, I know I can trust you to teach me how to repair.
Mm-hmm.
But if you never show me that, then, you know, and sure, the consumer has a responsibility for sure to not look at someone's Instagram page and see it through this filter of, oh, they have everything figured out. Like that's not fair either, right? So I'm saying, again, like this is a reciprocity thing, I feel like, mm-hmm. is it's like, yes, it's on the part of the consumer to not make judgments about a practitioner based on what they're posting on Instagram. For sure. That's unfair. That is a fragment of their life, of their humanness. And also, it is the responsibility of the practitioner to really show the vulnerable, authentic part of themselves and not the part that's pretty and polished and branded and all of that, so that the consumer can make a more informed choice. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it absolutely does. I feel like we're transitioning from talking about the not enough wound to the I'm too much wound. And this is something that I've had happen several times now, which is I've now started to, I can kind of pick out the clients who are going to go down this rabbit hole, but when somebody feels safe with me, with you, and they see like, oh, like we've been able to work through some of these like medium level sort of woundings, for them, it might actually even be like the deepest they've gone through into their woundings. Ultimately, what happens is they feel safe enough to like revert back to a much, much younger version of themselves that felt like, oh my God, I'm too much. And I'm having these like really big feelings and I really want to throw a temper tantrum, but I can't throw a temper tantrum because mom, dad, caregivers aren't going to accept me and I'm going to lose my sense of belonging if I throw a temper tantrum here. Mm-hmm. And this is where I've heard this phrase so many times, I'm not coachable.
Ooh, because I haven't heard that one yet.
Yeah.
No, not yet.
Because they get to a place that feels really sort of stuck and stubborn. And in order for them to move through it, if we talk about like the polybagel letter that you love talking about, they have to move through like a mobilization phase.
Yeah, they do.
And that mobilization phase often looks like lashing out, looks like a temper tantrum, looks like a big fiery ball of feelings, of sadness, of grief, whatever it is that they've been so scared to like really touch in with themselves. And me as a practitioner, it's this really, really fine balance between I have to hold my boundaries and I also have to like not take things personally mm-hmm. as it comes up. And I've had clients who have shown me the parts of themselves that they deem to be the most disgusting. I'm using words that people have actually said to me. This is the most disgusting. This is the most shameful parts of me. These are the parts that I can't show anybody because if I show them this, they'll see how ugly I am. And my job as a practitioner is to sit there and hold them and love them through that because they didn't get that experience when they were growing up. They got a much different experience.
Totally.
And without giving away specifics, you know, I remember at the very end of our call, I remember asking you like, well, what if the reason why David and I love you is because you're so big?
Yeah.
And like having that be a disconfirming experience of like, oh, I get to be big and people love me still.
Yeah.
Is such an important one that I think that coaches and clients are really scared to get into. And my clients who have been able to get to that place with me, like I look at them now and like they are embracing their bigness. They are loving their bigness. Like they are loud and so beautiful in the ways that they're meant to be loud and beautiful and like ways that like their inner three-year-old has always wanted to be. Mm. And I don't know, like it brings tears to my eyes because like I'm so proud of them, but also like they're so proud of themselves, which I think is more important.
Yeah. 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 Do you think that, because I had an interesting thing happen. Our first Feel Without Fear group call for this cohort was earlier this week. And it was really beautiful because people are just, this container, they're instantly vulnerable. Like, I'm not having to like wait and, you know, be patient and like create it and all that. It's like the safety is there and they're instantly vulnerable.
Yeah.
And this one person in the group, she had a really big movement of anger on the group call, was screaming, I'm so angry. I'm so fucking angry. Just screaming, And I was like keeping an eye on her mostly. And then every once in a while I would see something come up in the chat. So I'd like glance over and look at the chat and then I'd look back at her. And in the chat, people were saying like, we're here. We're holding space for your sacred rage. This is beautiful. Keep going. You're safe. Like that's what they're saying in the chat. I wasn't saying any of that. I was just making sure she's okay and letting her have this process because she didn't need any interference in the process. She just needed to have this explosion.
Yeah.
And I was telling my Feel Without Fear alumni yesterday, I was explaining the same situation that happened. And one of them was actually on that call. And then she came to the call yesterday, which was a totally separate call. And she said, Lindsay, I wasn't even watching the person who was having the big anger thing. She said, I was watching you and taking notes on you as a practitioner and how you held that space. And you were so not threatened by what she was doing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I think to the extent that I've gotten more comfortable and less afraid of my own big feelings, the more I'm able to hold space for other people and theirs.
Yeah.
100%. Like it just doesn't scare me. Where a lot of practitioners, I think, would, you know, and certainly therapists would see an outburst like that and it would be like diagnosed as something.
Yeah.
You know, like that is so unacceptable. That's so big. It's so severe that like we have to label that as something. Holy shit. And so I wonder if a lot of these people who think they're uncoachable, like, have they just not had space held for them by practitioners who aren't threatened by them being in that emotional state? Like, have they been work? Are these practitioners? And this is not a judgment on practitioners, but at the same time, it's me feeling like the old lady seasoned practitioner, being like, "Okay, listen here, you youngins," you know, like. You have to go as far down into that pit in yourself as you possibly can to be able to guide someone and hold space for them while they go and excavate that pit themselves.
Yeah.
And like, I wonder if a lot of these coaching wounds are, you know, they're not inflicted on purpose. It's just inflicted because that practitioner wasn't able to hold that space for that person because they can't hold it for themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
Am I making sense?
You are. And I think that you've just made explicit like what I've been trying to say. So like, thank you for putting it into words. But I had a turning point in my career. I went to a fertility symposium and got to listen to a practitioner who I'd been really looking up to for many years. And in her lecture, her name's Randine Anderson, and she's, you know, we'll say big in the fertility acupuncture world, air quotes. In her lecture, it was so different from everyone else's lecture because everyone else went into like, well, these are the points you go into, these are the protocols, these are the things. And she was like this quote was a crossroads for me as a practitioner, is the best thing that you can do for your clients is to do the inner work for yourself so that when these big things come up, because fertility is a big thing for people, like you can hold space for whatever is coming up for them. Mm-hmm. And I think previous to that, I had sort of deemed my own self-development, my own sort of like curiosities. And at the time, I think I was like just getting into Brené Brown and like Eckhart Tolle was like a brand new name for me. And, you know, almost feeling guilty for doing this stuff on the side. And when she said that, I like something clicked in me and I was like, oh, that stuff that I'm actually curious about is ultimately going to serve my clients, even if it's not like a specific point protocol. Mm-hmm. And to me, this is the place that I think we fall short in our Western consumerist sort of society, is we have a tendency to like want to like cling to protocol. Like, show me the coaching technique that you're using. Yeah. Give me the program that this came from. And while I do honor lineage, I think that lineage is important. There is something about just sitting with somebody when they're having a big feeling that you can't teach from a certification or from a book.
No.
That comes from you having the lived experience of like getting into your own sacred rage.
Yeah.
And being like, oh, I didn't die from that.
Mm-hmm.
And that opens up your capacity to hold other people's sacred rage. And I think in particular, it helps you not take it personally. I think that a younger version of me, that thing that you're describing, a younger version of me like 10 years ago would have been like, she's pushing up on my boundaries. This isn't okay. Because I hadn't at that point accessed anger and like yeah. felt into my own anger. Versus, you know, like if something like that happened in one of my groups now, I think that we hold space in similar but different ways. But it's just like, okay, like let's just be here with it.
Yeah.
This is what's and happening. have it be okay. And then that gets to be a disconfirming experience for that person, because now their anger is acceptable mm-hmm. and isn't something that's going to get them ostracized from the group. And if anything, in a group like Feel Without Fear, it's actually going to be inspiring for the people in there, because they're all there to do really vulnerable work.
Yeah. And it totally was. There were people in the chat were saying like, this inspires me to be more present with my own anger.
Yeah.
And yeah, I think, you know, a version of me 2 years ago, I probably would not have known what to do in that situation.
Yeah.
Like if I had someone show up and have that big of a movement, yeah. you know, I would have been like, oh my God, are they having a breakdown? Like, are they okay? Like, and I mean, this person is like over in the UK. So if I was afraid of what she was doing, and I had those stories of like, oh my gosh, is she okay? Is she having a break? Is she like, oh my God, what it like, is she suicidal? Is she like so massively flooded and triggered that there's nothing that I can say or do to help? Like, I think 2 years ago, version of me would have been like that.
Yeah.
Because the truth is like on a Zoom call, whether they're in the UK or they're like, you know, in the next state over, there's literally nothing I can do except hold that space. And yeah. like, that's all I can do. And yeah. it would have freaked me out, because I would have thought, did I do something wrong? Like, yeah. did the teaching trigger her in this way? Like, was it unsafe, you know? And so, you know, I think that that's the grace of the universe that I didn't have someone in a container 2 years ago who had a big mm-hmm. movement like that, because I couldn't have handled it, you know?
Yeah. yeah.
Like when she was all done, she was just like taking big breaths and she was like, I feel so much better. God, yeah. I feel so much better. I feel so good. Like, I don't feel frozen anymore. I feel mm-hmm. alive. And I told everyone in the group, I said, I want you all to know this is so normal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is not a problem. This is not too big. This is not too much. This is so normal. And if some part of you is like, oh, that's not normal. There's something wrong with her. It's only because you've never seen it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And myself as a practitioner 2-3 years ago, I had not even allowed myself to see myself having a movement like that.
Mm.
So of course it wasn't normal to me.
Yeah. 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 And I think that as practitioners, we're taught that we have to fix these things for people rather than just be with them, with people, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I see this with, I feel like I'm going to have a horse story every single time we talk now, but I see this with my colt Coco. I've only had him, I don't think I've even had him for a week now, but his story is that he was adopted out by my friend Suzanne, who runs a really lovely rescue. She trusted the person that she adopted him out to, and that person ended up starving him. Like, when I first met him, he was skin and bones. She had just gotten him back. She had just repoed him 2 days before I saw him, and he was just the skinniest. Like, you could see every rib on his body. Mm. And now when I feed him, he has rage. Like, he has a scarcity wound around food. And so, like, the first day he tried to bite me when I gave him his grain for the night, and, you know, Suzanne's never done anything mean or horrible to him, but I think that he had, like, he bit me and then, like, looked at me like, what are you gonna do? And I was just like, I get it. I, like, it's totally understandable that you're mad. I'm gonna hold this boundary now, and you can't come near me again until I put the food down. But, like, I'm not gonna be angry at you. I'm not upset. Like, it's totally understandable that you're angry around food. And he hasn't bit me since. And, you know, I think that that's where, like, just when we hold space for the thing that is understandable, like, I don't know what your client's story is, but I imagine that there's something back there that is understandable and connected to her anger.
Oh, 100%. Her anger makes so much sense.
Yeah. And so the moment that we say that makes sense,
mm-hmm.
you know, as a practitioner, or even just as yourself, like working with your own wounds, mm-hmm. if you can get to a place where you can look at that story, whether it's your client or yourself, and say, you know what, that totally makes sense, then we can just release the shame around it.
Yep.
You know? Because we all have good girl, good boy programming that tells us that we have to be kind. We have to be soft. We have to be gentle. We have to, you know, like, not express ourselves because it might scare somebody. And the moment that we can release that story. And oftentimes it is this big flash. It's scary.
Yeah.
But on the other side of it, like your client was saying, oh, I feel so much better.
Yeah. I have three things that I say. I mean, I have a lot of things that I say. My audience at this point is like, they're asking for Lindsay Lockett merch. They're like, we need a t-shirt that says, isn't it interesting? Because I say that so much. That's like one of my signature phrases. You know, anybody that comes, as soon as I spot it as a story, I just, isn't that interesting? That's so interesting. I wonder why that is. To just like create some curiosity and some space around it, you know? But when people are having those big moments and big movements of anger or grief or even shutting down, like even totally shutting down and going blank or going nonverbal or something, I have three things that I say. And I'll say, like, depending on what's appropriate at that moment, I'll say, like, that makes so much sense that you feel that way.
Yeah.
I also will say, I believe you.
Mm.
And I say, I believe this is hard for you.
Mm-hmm.
So that immediately tears down any self-judgment that they have for themselves. It attunes to them because so many of their parents growing up were like, there's nothing wrong with you. You're fine. Yeah. You need to get over it. Just
get over it. Yeah.
Yeah. And so for them to have a big emotion now and someone, an adult is across the screen from them going, I believe you.
Yeah.
I believe this is hard for you.
Yeah.
Like, it softens them and it opens them so that they can become that channel for that emotion to flow through instead of it getting stuck mm-hmm. and lodged in the body. And then it becomes mm-hmm. a pattern that they have to adapt around. And then they develop adaptive survival patterns so that they don't feel that. And, yeah. you know, the layers start stacking on top of it again. And, you know, I'm not like trying to toot my own horn. I definitely – I mean, coaching is a practice, right? It's not like I'm never going to get to the point where I have it all figured out. Just like awareness is a practice. Business yeah. is a practice. Like we're practicing every day. We're learning new things every single day. Mm-hmm. Things – ideas that I had about myself and about my business even 6 months ago, they're different now, right? Yeah. Because it's a practice. And so I think that – practitioners who are in spaces of like they can't hold a client's big feelings or their marketing is hitting on pain points and super long sales pages and please buy from me, please see my worth, please see my value, like all of that. It's not that they're a bad practitioner. Like they're probably a great practitioner for some people. Mm-hmm. And so I think in the same vein as like any practitioners who might be listening to this episode, like what I would hope you would take away from it is that whether you ever get another client or not, your work is to continue holding that space for yourself with complete acceptance and non-judgment. Mm-hmm. And to the extent that you're able to do that, you are able to do that for other people. Mm-hmm. But then for people who aren't practitioners, who may be looking to hire a coach or a therapist or a new doctor or somebody in the future, is it's like, now that you have this language, like notice their ability to hold space.
Yeah.
Are they able to do that? Feel what that feels like in your body. Are they willing to answer your questions or do they just like pass through it? Like you have too much doubt and uncertainty if you have questions, you know, like mm-hmm. stuff like that, like really feel into it. And I think our clients or potential clients, whether they find us on social media or Google searches or whatever, like feel into your discernment about people.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
and I think that that's the, yeah, I think that that's the case for like any professional that you hire.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm even thinking about like, I will full on admit I have an accountant wound because I had an accountant a couple years ago who made some really big mistakes and I saw the mistakes happening, but I felt stupid for asking the questions. Mm. And it cost me a lot of money. The IRS still has not paid me back. And, you know, the feeling that I had in my body when I was around her is I need to prove myself, like, and I need to prove that like I'm worthy of hiring her. And so I'm not going to ask these questions that I think are super basic. And one of the questions that I think was super basic was like, hey, I think I see a mistake here. Can we look at it together? And I just hired a new accountant. I love him. He hasn't even done any work for me and I love him. like on the connection call, he was just so sensitive, so attuned, like when I was sort of sharing my experience with this other accountant, he was like, that's totally understandable. I'm so sorry that happened to you. His name's Rocco Tundo, by the way. And he's going to come teach in he's going to come teach in BAM nice. For me as well. But like, I think that, and like the contractor, like my contractor is amazing. Like, so like, you know, it's not just about like therapists and coaches and people that you like classically think of as like holding space, but like there's real world applications for plumbers and accountants and bookkeepers, and like feeling into your body, how you feel when you're around them matters a lot because mm-hmm. your body has so much more wisdom than I think we all give ourselves credit for and is going to give you information about whether this person is safe or not, you know? When I think back on that interaction with that first accountant, my body didn't feel safe around her. And I knew it and I overwrote it because I was like, she's a professional. She's got a shit ton of Instagram followers. She's, you know, worked for X, Y, and Z companies. And so like, she has to know her shit. And ultimately that ended up costing me. And I just had this really lovely back and forth with one of my past coaching clients, and she's looking for a therapist right now. And so she's like doing the due diligence of like going through her insurance and like meeting with, you know, having a first session with therapist and being like, okay, so do I like this person or not? And she messaged me last week and she was like, thank you so much for the space that you've held for me, because I've just met with this therapist and I realized that like, we aren't going to be able to get to the depths that I really need to go to with her because she doesn't feel that safe to me. And then she messaged me this week and she was like, I found somebody and I was able to like recognize that she was a safe person because she feels really similar to you. And so my body knows what safe feels like. And so I'm going to go with this practitioner. And yeah. I loved hearing that because like, if we as coaches can become a benchmark for safety for our clients, like how fucking empowering is that for our clients?
Yeah.
Because now that applies anywhere they go, whether that is a potential romantic partner, a friendship, a contractor, a new therapist, like they now know what attunement feels like because their body has picked up that information. And particularly for folks who haven't had attunement in their lives before, like that's massive.
Yeah, that's really huge. I got full body chills when you said that. But like, it just resonated so much to be like, wow, like what an honor to be someone's benchmark for like, this is what safety feels like. And I won't settle for anything less than this anymore.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to override that intuitive, discerning feeling that something might not be right. Mm-hmm. Like, that's really, really huge.
Yeah.
And I think the worst way, oh my God, the worst way that I could ever be insulted as a practitioner, I mean, it would be really hurtful, is for a client to tell me, like, you weren't safe for me. Like, that would be like a knife to my heart, because like that literally is my only goal. It's like, if I am nothing else to you, I will be safe. So if I was ever like not safe for someone, that would be devastating.
On the flip side, that's like the deepest compliment that anyone can give me, as
that you're not safe,
or that that I am safe.
Yes. Am safe. Absolutely. Yes. Deepest compliment.
Yeah.
Also, worst thing to hear if someone were to tell me I wasn't safe for them.
Yeah.
Which, well, go ahead.
I was going to say, like, can we poke into that a little bit?
Yeah, I was actually going to bring up. So the client that I talked about at the beginning of this episode that I loved, whose doctor told her, don't let your heart rate get too high. We had, I think we had 3 sessions left in her 6-month package. And she needed to reschedule something. And I totally made some assumptions and judgments that weren't accurate. Because this is my fault. I had so much on my calendar that week that any change or move or needing to reschedule felt really abrasive and like frustrating for me. I don't often have weeks like that. This week and next week I have those weeks because we're getting ready to go on vacation. So like my calendar looks a lot more full than it normally does. And at this time, my calendar was a lot more full than it normally was. And so she was like, I need to reschedule this and this because of this and this. And I got a little snappy about it because I was frustrated and annoyed. And we figured it out. But she ended up firing me. And it's the first and only time I've ever been fired. And, you know, I'm not going to like make projections at her or whatever, but my sort of summarization of what happened afterwards was like, yes, I fucked up in the way that I reacted about the rescheduling thing. And I was more frustrated than was actually appropriate for the situation, because she was giving me plenty of time and notice and all of that. But what wounded her, and like, I felt like, okay, is this really real? Like, really? Was kind of how I felt about it. It's still how I feel about it, actually. And this was like 5 months ago. So I've had a while to sit with it and digest it. And I still feel this way about it. But she said that because of the scheduling snafu, that she no longer felt safe to be vulnerable with me. And, you know, I tried asking into that. I tried being like, okay, like, I totally acknowledge that I fucked up. I've apologized that I fucked up. I've rescheduled you for the time that you want, but you're keeping the appointment, but you don't feel safe to be vulnerable with me. Like, I don't understand, you know? So that is, I have been told I don't feel safe to be vulnerable with you. And that felt like a knife to the heart. And so even though I don't quite understand the connection between the two, I mean, this client, you know, one of the patterns that we were working on was perfectionism. And she had health anxiety, so she had a lot of perfectionism about her body. And that was the whole thing, where we were trying to show her body that you can do new things and not be perfect at it and still be okay.
Yeah.
And what I felt like as the coach, like, I can acknowledge I fucked up with the scheduling. I was abrasive and didn't need to be. I got frustrated and I took it out on her, and that wasn't fair of me. But I also sort of felt like her perfectionism was being projected onto me. Like, I made one mistake in 6 months of working with someone. I made one mistake. I owned it. I apologized for it. I made it right. And she still fired me. And like, she gets to do whatever she needs to do to feel safe. And if not working with me anymore is what makes her feel safe, I accept that. And like, I did. I refunded her for the three sessions that she wasn't going to have, and we parted ways. I would have liked to have parted in a more friendly way, but you know, we don't always get what we want. So, ooh, that feels really vulnerable to share. I noticed that I'm like, oh my God, the thousands of people who might listen to this are probably really judging me right now, but like, it's okay. I can be transparent about this because it really happened.
Yeah. And you know, to me, what that brings up is like this question I've been really like sitting with, like in like deep reverence for the last couple of months, is what is your responsibility and what's not your responsibility? You know, I'm hearing that you took responsibility.
I did.
And you can't force somebody to then also, because I think that, you know, there is a level of perfectionism that she projected onto you. And if she's looking for perfect in order to feel safe, she's going to bounce from practitioner to practitioner until she starts learning that there's a common thread here. And that common denominator is her and perhaps her perfectionism. You know? And you know, I think because you've been really vulnerable, it's inspired me to share that, like, the one time that I've been fired was, you know, similar sort of situation. And so, like, we had finished out a 6-month container. At the very last session, this client was going through a breakup. And she asked me, you know, what would it look like to continue working with you? And, you know, we sort of discussed it. And then afterwards, I sent her a link to like the information, like my package information, so that she could like, you know, sit with it a little bit longer. And then I got sick. Like, I don't know if you remember, Lindsay, but like last year,
you were sick forever.
I was sick. Like, I literally could not leave my bed for like 2 weeks. And then I had a cough that like lasted for like 3 months or something like that. It was ridiculous. And in the middle of that, I was launching BAM. And I, like, luckily I had set everything up before I got sick, and basically Andre and Alicia, who was my assistant at the time, like, handled the launch. Like, I did nothing for the launch. I wrote all the copy, sent it off to them, like, beforehand, and they did everything, which I'm super grateful for. And this client wrote me a very, very angry text message saying, I just shared something incredibly vulnerable with you on our very last call, and you had the nerve to just send me a link to your, you know, basically like your sales page, and you never checked in with me. How could you, like, you know, basically just like ignore me, and like now I just feel like a number.
She felt abandoned.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, again, is the thing that we've been working on. Like, she's got
abandonment, like, trauma.
Yeah, she's got abandonment trauma. And so, you know, I explained, I apologized. I was like, that is completely out of my norm. And, you know, I'm so sorry that, like, I didn't follow up with you. You know, like, we've spent, I think I want to say we had spent almost a year together. And so again, like you, this is the first time I've kind of messed up in the relational wound aspect. And it happened to be that, like, one relational wound that, like, she just, like, was having such a hard time getting over and integrating. And she ended up, well, it's not exactly a firing because she never ended up, like, signing up to work with me again, but she was very angry. And she even pointed to, like, well, you're posting all these things on Instagram about BAM and how you hold safe space. So how dare you post things like that when you've not been a safe space for me? Oh. And again, like, this is sort of where that, like, that line and that boundary of, like, I cannot make this better for you. What I can do is I can take accountability and responsibility for the part that I played in it. And I'm not using my sickness as, like, an excuse, but the reality is, like, I had no brain cells for, like, a month. Like, yeah. Like, I canceled all of my client calls for, like, 2 weeks and just was, like, I think I watched the entirety of, oh gosh, what is that medical show? I'm not gonna remember the name of the show, but I watched, like, an entire, like, like 5 or 6 seasons of a show, like, and, like, was just in bed, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think that, like, we can do our part. Our responsibility is to do our part and to do our own inner work so that we can hold safe space for people. And then when we mess up, because we're human beings who are going to mess up, it is our responsibility to then do our best to repair that rupture. But the other person also has to be willing to come to the table, mm-hmm. and to, like, look at their part of it in it too. And to, yeah. look at it with, like, a certain sense of neutrality of, like, oh, this person is, like, a human being. And, like, it's kind of understandable that, you know, in your case, you were feeling overbooked and threatened by your schedule. In my case, I was feeling sick and, like, had no brain cells.
Yeah.
And I think for both of those client examples, there's a level of a younger version of themselves that, like, really, really needed that need met.
Yeah.
And couldn't get that need met. And it's really hard and frustrating and scary when that need isn't met.
Yeah. And also, it doesn't make you an unsafe person.
Yeah. Yeah. And same to you.
Yeah. I mean, that was, I feel like I had a lot of clarity after that. And I was just like, you know, like, I'm a human and my schedule's overbooked, and it's, you know, it wasn't my fault that my schedule was overbooked. That's just what needed to happen that week. It wasn't her fault that my schedule was overbooked. And in someone who didn't have this big perfectionism wound, it probably wouldn't have been a big deal.
Yeah.
You know, like, if it had happened with another client, it probably would not have been a big deal.
Yeah.
Just like this thing with your client. If that had happened with a different client who didn't have that abandonment wound,
yeah,
it probably would have been a different conversation. She would have been like, totally. Oh, I totally understand. You were sick. Your team was posting all that stuff on Instagram for you. You weren't the one doing it.
Yeah.
Like, you've been in bed watching Grey's Anatomy or whatever it was you were watching. I don't know how to reconcile that as a coach with a client, because it's like, if the client has made up their mind that I am the villain in their story, then there's nothing that I can do to change that. And personally, I think it would be unethical of me to try to talk them out of that.
Yeah.
And so there has to be this acceptance of like, okay, you need me to be the villain in your story, and I can accept that. And how do I need to like close this relationship in a way that when I look back from this 6 months or a year or 5 years from now, I'm not going to still feel icky about? Like,
yeah.
So that's why I refunded her. That's why, like, I tried to talk her through, like, you know, I'm sorry that I wasn't perfect for you. And I tried to say, like, there's all these times over here where I have been safe for you. And then there's this one time where I haven't been. And I feel like you're judging me and the entirety of our relationship based on this one thing and forgetting all of this stuff over here that proves I am a safe space for you to be vulnerable. But I accept it. I'm going to refund you. And I hope you find what you're looking for.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so like when I feel hesitation about sharing the story, it's not because I still feel bad about the story or because there's still like loose ends hanging out that feel raw. It's just because I know that people listening sometimes have a tendency to judge. Mm-hmm. And especially if they see me as an expert and they're like, oh, you weren't a safe person for that one time, you know, like it means this about you. And
I think, like, if that's coming up in your mind, it's time to maybe check your own perfectionist wound. If
totally, yeah, because like any person you hire, even if they're like a medical doctor from Harvard, yeah, like they're going to make mistakes because they are human.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's no therapist, there's no coach, there's no practitioner, there's no contractor, there's no realtor, there's no plumber, there's no nobody who doesn't still make mistakes. And like mistakes don't make you a harmful, unsafe person. And like, speaking of wokeness, I feel like that's what wokeness is starting to try to establish, is that humans making human mistakes makes people inherently unsafe and harmful. And that's such bullshit.
Yeah. I feel today's just like the day for vulnerable talks. I feel like this is something that feels a little bit unprocessed and something that I'm like sitting with and trying to decide like how I want to move forward with it. So Israel-Palestine is happening. I've been, how do I say this? I've been called in for not saying anything. People feel that because I have, I mean, I don't even feel like I've got a big platform, but like people feel that I should be saying something about it.
Interesting.
And I am sitting with what I want to say, how I want to say.
Do you want to say?
So this is where I feel like I'm not an expert on the Middle East. I have been watching a lot more things on not mainstream media because I want to learn more. Honestly, I do. I've been having a lot of conversations with Andre, who is very actively like in learner mode, and I trust him because he has a tendency to like, he's like such a researcher. He's a one line in human design. And so like he does a lot of the research and then is like, hey, this is something that I think you'd be interested in. Like, he's really good at distilling down information for me. And it's such a nuanced issue. And because my platform is a place where I teach, I don't feel comfortable teaching about this particular social issue because I'm not I am very like I am.
Because you're
like,
not a geopolitical war expert.
Yeah, I'm like
how dare you?
Middle East 101.
How dare you not be a geopolitical war expert?
Yeah, and I don't want to add to the noise because yeah. I think that there are a lot of people who are experts and who are actively being affected by this in the world right now. And for me to like just reshare things or take up space on my own platform and like say something about it feels not quite right.
Performative.
Yeah. I think the place where I can speak on is talking about sacred rage. Like, to me, like, that does not matter which side I fall on. It does not matter, like, what my, like, specific thoughts are on this. What I do see happening in that particular instance, and also with, like, several social things that have come up in the last, 2-3 years, is, like, this aspect of sacred rage being necessary. And I think that the violence that we're seeing is because we haven't been able to set down real boundaries with our sacred rage. And now it's mutated and turned into something really, like, really, really scary. Mm-hmm. And so if I say something, I feel like that's where I want to speak on, because I do feel like I am an expert on emotions. I'm not an expert on the Middle East.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm really intentional about what I share in my space. And yeah, it does feel performative to me to like be like, hey, you know, I now want to talk about this thing that I am just learning about.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if you have thoughts about that.
I mean, my thoughts are like, I'm so surprised you have such a smaller audience than I have. And for you to be called out about that. And I literally I haven't heard a single word. Literally none of my followers are like, why aren't you talking about this?
In the last week, I've had 10 messages.
Oh my God. That's nuts.
Yeah.
And I've had none. Literally yeah. Nobody has been like, why aren't you talking about this? As a trauma-informed educator, blah, de, blah, de, blah, you should
be that's how it's
worded. Yeah, like, honestly, Kat, like, here's my sacred rage. Fuck them. Like, really, really, because I'm finding it. like, first of all, it's okay to be disturbed by disturbing things. And what's happening in the Middle East is a disturbing thing, right? I'm not a person who watches the news. So
same.
I am so uneducated. I'm so uneducated about what's happening. My very surface level understanding is that, you know, there are these Palestinians who live in the Gaza Strip. And Israel has basically like blocked it off, kept it from escaping, and is dropping bombs on them. And the United States, because the U.S. is a supporter of Israel, is like involved in that. And so now the U.S. and Canada are like committing genocide along with Israel. Like that is my very surface level understanding of that. Why do I need to say that on the internet? Like why? Like, sure, is genocide wrong? Of course it is. Is war bad? Yeah, obviously. Like, I'm very anti-war. I'm very anti-military. Like, I'm not a patriotic American. Probably be canceled over that now. But, like, there is nothing that I, as a single person, can do to affect any sort of positive change in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. And I understand people who do watch the news and they feel so sad or rageful about what's going on over there. And I get that they feel powerless, like they desperately want to do something to help. And there's nothing that they can do. Nothing. No. So, like, I joked on someone else's podcast the other day about this very issue. I was like, all I can keep doing is focusing on myself and my little web in the world. And maybe somebody who's high up in the US government, in the military, is on Instagram and they come across my page. Just maybe. And they see something that makes them come into awareness about, like, is that, what purpose does it serve for me to want to drop a bomb on Palestinian children? Right. And like get into awareness about that and then decide, like, this is not who I authentically am. And they quit their job in the military or whatever. Like, I know this is such a hypothetical, but that's the level of, like, I can do nothing. And me posting about it doesn't change what's happening.
Yeah.
And so it would just be performative for me to try to stick my nose in this. It's not on message. Like, yes, is trauma being caused over there? Absolutely it is. What can I do about it? Mm-hmm. How do I need to educate people? I don't. Mm-hmm. And I feel like this is, like, in their hopelessness, people feel voiceless. And then they look at someone like me or someone like you who has a voice. And they're like, I'm voiceless and powerless, but you should be using your voice about this because you're not powerless. Mm. And that's, I just don't think that's real.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, again, it goes back to this, like, concept of, like, what's my responsibility and what's not my responsibility. I mean, I'm not, like, for me, I think you and I have very different experiences with Instagram just because of numbers. And, like, to me, it's not like a fuck them sort of a situation. Like, I hear genuine concern in sure. the messages. And my responsibility, I don't know that I've ever, like, distilled it down like this, but, like, my responsibility is to help people come into nervous system regulation, alchemize their emotions so that they can then go do the work that they're meant to do in the world. If somebody in my realm, again, sort of like what you were saying, if there's somebody in my web who, like, that is their work, is to, and I'm not saying work like this is your career, but like this is your purpose in life, is to be a voice for the travesties that are happening in the world right now, then I can support you in that. It is not my work to do that.
Yeah.
You know? And I felt very similarly when we were going through some of the instances that were happening back in 2020 with, like, George Floyd's murder, things like that. Like, I felt like I had a responsibility to hold space for people. And right now I am actually holding space for folks who are, like, being affected by stuff that's happening in Israel and Palestine, but I hate to say it like this because I feel like this makes me sound like I'm callous, but I'm not. Like, there's a certain amount of responsibility that I hold, and it's not my fight, and I would be taking up space in a place that's actually not mine to take up. Mm-hmm. So I'm okay being in the background and help people, like, alchemize their emotions. And that's where I'm like, ooh, I can talk about this, but, like, from the framework of, like, let's embrace sacred rage because, like, we really need to, like, understand that as part of our emotional landscape.
Yeah.
But, like, when it comes to, like, the history of the Middle East, like, it's like, there's so much there that yeah. I can't possibly be the, like, one voice that's going to, like, change people's lives.
Right.
I think that to add to what you were saying about, like, people feel voiceless in this and they see, and again, like, I don't have a big following. I have, like, less than 4,000 followers on Instagram, you know, but they see someone like me or you as having a voice and therefore perhaps having a bit more power than they do. But I also see people being like, are you on my team? You know? And I don't think that this is something that, like, war is horrible. Like, there are things being committed on both sides that are really horrible. Mm-hmm. And I don't really want to take a side in such a way that it forgives what the other side is doing as being okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so, and I also like, not that it's like I have to stay on brand. Like, obviously, like, I don't really care that much about branding, but like, I think that, when I am sharing something that I don't feel fully integrated about, I feel like I'm being unethical.
Totally.
And so to me, to be somebody who is approaching this thing as an ethical person means that I have the privilege to respond rather than react. And so for me to be just reactive and like be like, hey, like I'm going to repost all these things and this is how I feel about it because X, Y, and Z, like I have, not everybody has that privilege. Mm-hmm. Right. And so like, if I want to say something, I want to say it from a regulated place or as regulated as I can be about it. So yeah. That's happening. Yeah.
That's real, man. That's so real. And I'm so shocked that you've had that many people being like, you need to say something about this. And I've literally had none. But I think that if people can't look at your work or my work and see how it can generally be applied to pretty much anything. Mm-hmm. And it is a message of awareness and love and curiosity and openness and getting underneath story and like feeling your feelings and all of that. Like that can be enough. So it's like, yeah. I am saying something about it because I'm saying something about pain.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm saying something about healing, because I'm saying something about trauma, because I'm saying something about emotions. These are experiences that every human has. So whether it's the pain and trauma of abuse and abandonment from childhood, or it's the pain and trauma of two countries at war and children dying in the Middle East, or it's the pain and trauma of our planet being, you know, milked for resources, or it's the pain and trauma of racism or the pain, like it literally applies to all of it.
Yeah.
So it's like, just because I'm not speaking to this specific issue doesn't mean that I don't care or that like I'm, you know, not interested or whatever. Like I'm doing my work in the world, which is to point people back to curiosity and love. Mm-hmm. So I can't fix this conflict in the Middle East, you know, just like I can't fix racism or I can't fix pipelines. Like I can't fix any of those things. And I personally, my purpose in this life is not to be an activist. Mm-hmm. Like helping people heal trauma is the only form of activism I know.
Yeah.
But like, I'm not a protester. I'm not going to go sit on a pipeline and, you know, block equipment from building that pipeline. I know people who do, and I mm-hmm. admire them for what they do, but they're not shaming me because I'm not doing that, you know, because not everyone can do that. You're not called to that. I'm not called to that. We're doing activism in the way that we do activism, and other people are like more on the ground and more there in real time, and that's fine too. And I'm really sorry if people are putting you in a position of making you feel really awkward or self-conscious about like what you're sharing and what you know. Because that sucks.
I mean, I think had this happened a year ago, I would have felt a lot more like awkward and self-conscious about it. Like to me, like I see their wounding in it.
Yeah,
they're asking, you know, do we still belong together? And if the only way that we belong together is if I'm an activist in the ways that they're an activist, then we don't belong together, and that's okay.
We don't belong, and that's okay.
You know?
Yeah, I feel like anything that I would post specifically about literally any world issue would come from a place of ignorance and being uninformed, and, you know, and like you, I don't think that's ethical. I don't think I need to be able to speak to everything because I'm not a geopolitical expert.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to be, you know, and that doesn't mean I don't care.
Right.
But
right. I think that that's the piece there is like, I care very much. I care enough to like educate myself, and I care enough to like go out of my like right now very busy day to like learn more. But me not like me taking the time to integrate before I share anything does not mean that I don't care.
And even if you share nothing, it doesn't mean you don't care.
Yeah. Yeah. That too.
I mean, I totally posted a black square on my Instagram feed the day that George Floyd was killed. And I did that from a place of ignorance and people pleasing and performance. And it's the only thing I've ever posted on Instagram that I like feel gross about,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it's not because I don't care about racism. Of course
yeah.
I do,
yeah.
you know? But it came from this unintegrated place of just like, well, this is what everyone else is doing, so I guess this is what I'm supposed to do too. You know, it's like being part of the crowd and following what other people are doing in a performative way that really, what did that black square do? What impact did that make?
Mm-hmm.
Did that change anything?
Yeah.
It didn't.
Yeah.
So then what purpose did it serve? Like, that's my question that I ask. What purpose does this serve? Well, one, it serves the purpose of giving me the illusion that I'm doing something, but I'm not actually doing something. It serves the purpose of making me feel like I'm part of something meaningful, but I'm really not. I'm just watching it happen. I'm not actually part of it. It gives the illusion that I'm educated and informed about this thing that I'm actually not educated and informed about. Like, no part of that came from an authentic, grounded, integrated place. And I promised myself from that point forward, like, I mean, I've had people reach out after school shootings and being like, why aren't you talking about this?
Yeah.
And it's like, because I don't know enough about it to talk about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not going to perform talking about it because it makes me look good and it makes you feel better.
Right. And I think that it kind of goes back to what like the concept around our conversation has been is like, it's okay as a practitioner. Actually, it's not just okay. Like, this is the work that you need and should be doing as a practitioner, to like allow the integration to happen before you go out there and share stuff.
Yeah. And it takes as long as it takes.
Yeah.
Like yeah. that's the thing. We don't get to rush that integration process. Sometimes it happens really quickly. Sometimes it takes a year or more.
Yeah.
And when you jump into something before you're ready and it's not integrated, you're more likely to go back into those unconscious survival patterns that you've been working to heal from to begin with.
Absolutely. Yeah. So.
Deep conversation today.
Lots of stuff. Lots of sticky stuff.
Yeah. Well, thank you for being a safe person to have these conversations with.
Yeah. And likewise. And if we get canceled, we get canceled.
We're living like we're already canceled, dude. So I dare them to come after us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, let's wrap it up for today. Thank you so much for being here. And we're going to be doing these once a month for folks who are wanting to hear our voice on controversial and sticky and juicy topics.
So that means our next one will be in January, new year, 2024.
Yeah. Yeah, so this one's going to come out first week of December, and we'll see you guys next month.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks so much for listening.
So, Lindsay, how can people find you?
I'm on Instagram at @IamLindsayLockett. My website is lindsaylockett.com, and that's with an EY, not an AY. And you can listen to my podcast, Holistic Trauma Healing, anywhere that you listen to podcasts. Where can people find you, Kat?
So my Instagram is where I hang out the most. That handle is kat.hosu.lee.
My website is kathosuli.com, and my podcast is the Rooted Business Podcast. And just like you, you can find it anywhere.
We'll see you next time.